Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Pettum here as always, and it's a bit of a late episode. We thought, why not give it another 24 hours? And of course, we're going to reflect on the 2-1 win over Chelsea. But of course, this is being recorded on Monday, so we wanted to kind of watch the FA Cup Youth Final, Villa versus Liverpool. Of course, another 2-1 win, so 2-1s all the way around in the last 48 hours. A very good 48 hours indeed for Villa in their entirety. But of course, it's not just me here. We do have Danny Raza and Sebastian Bacon as well. We'll go to Danny Raza first. How's it going?
Hey, dude. Don't know why you asked me to do a podcast on my birthday, but you know,
happy birthday.
I'm here nonetheless.
Shall we sing?
No, I can sing. No, it's not.
You're on your own here.
I can do any. I can do any tone you want.
Go for it.
No. It's fine.
Okay. I could do it like Stormzy or something if you want.
You sound like you really want to do this.
Hold on. Wait. Like Stormzy?
Yeah.
I'm not. No. I'm going to stop you right there. This could turn out to be very bad.
Go for it. Please. What a way to start the episode. The viewers want Cole, it. Yeah, this is what they want.
Show us how Stormzy raps, Cole.
No, I'm good.
No, you can't make false promises. Oh, one let down.
What's the Canadian equivalent of Stormzy?
Justin Bieber, probably. No, Drake. Drake, I guess.
I was going to say, the obvious one's Drake, and you've gone straight to Justin Bieber.
You missed out, Drake.
What is this podcast? Yeah, if you guys ever listened to the For the Love of Paul McGraw podcast, I put that on last night when I was doing my dishes. And the end of it is, of course, everyone's favorite Irishman, Neil Dunworth, singing Sweet Caroline. And his right-hand man, Patty, going, ooh, 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 in the background for like 2 minutes. So I was going to try to top that, but I didn't anyways. But of course, you can hear him. I'll say, and I'll go to him now, I should say. Sebi, how's it going?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's simple enough. I was expecting a better intro than that, but nonetheless, let's move on. I don't know what intro has been. Yeah.
Cole, just, you know, I feel like it's a good place to start here, right? I'm throwing you off because I know you want to, you want to get into this with your pre-scripted intro. But, like, do you know what the first thing on my mind was about fans being back?
What's that?
Who's coming up with the songs? Like, because straight away, right, there's chants, yeah? There's songs. There's an Ollie Watkins song. Who's choreographing that? Like, who's like, decided, right, this is the song we're using for this player? Because you can imagine if one person's singing it in the tone of one song, someone's singing it in the other.
Yeah, well... Seb's wagging his finger, so still. I want to hear what he has to say about this.
I could just imagine someone who's had one too many in the Aston Tavern beforehand getting his lads together and going, right, boys, I've got an idea. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And coming up with a chat. And they're like sat around the who's table drinking.
Who's that song for?
I don't know.
I feel like that's just the bass song for anybody if you can't come up with anything. Danny Raza, happy birthday. This is the greatest intro.
Is that your Drake impression?
No. No, that's my tragically hip impression. Just kidding. If anyone knows them, it's a Canadian band. But anyways, let's move on, of course. Well, thanks. Apparently Canadians are irrelevant. But anyways, RIP Gord Downie. But anyways, guys, let's get on to this game. I don't know what this podcast has been so far. Aston Villa 2, Chelsea 1. Two wins in the last two for Villa. Perfect ending to the season. Seb, I'll come back to you first. I mean, what a last couple games, and what a win on Sunday, I should say.
I know, yeah. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying it, but Dean Smith proved his doubters wrong, really, in those 2 weeks. I think both games he got his tactics spot on. I think he played to Chelsea's weakness. We've proved many times against the top six clubs that we're better on the counter-attack, and I think Dean almost told them to sit back a bit, wait, and then we can press them where it hurts. And I mean, we got the corner, which led to the goal from a counter-attack. And then the second goal, again, penalty, which came from a counter-attack. So, I mean, Tuchel couldn't deal with us. He was too busy thinking about a flake and a 99. But, I mean, it was a nice way to round it off. It was nice to have a final game of the season that, with nothing riding on it. I think it's first time in, what, 3-4 years that we've gone into the last game of the season knowing what division we're going to be in. So, I mean, it lets us prepare for next season. We can be more organised. We can start thinking about the summer market, as many media outlets have already started to do. But yeah, it puts us in a good position all round. And to take 3 points off a top six club, I'm not complaining with that.
Yeah, massively. And I mean, probably Premier League-wise, you could probably say we haven't been this comfortable in 10-plus years. So, especially for me as an international fan, it's something I'm not used to. And it's almost been comfortably uncomfortable, if that's even a thing. But Danny, I'll come to you. What's the bigger talking point, this win or Chelsea complaining to the Premier League that our stewards outside with their bus that making them wait 15 minutes because they're having ice cream?
Yeah, no, that was quite funny, wasn't it? You saw the little memes of Thomas Muller, you know, the press conference meme of him, you know, we called them Aston Vanilla, right? You saw the little tweets. It was a joke that was made, right, to exist. I mean, let's explain this, because I'm not sure if anybody knows what we're talking about. But at the end of the day, Chelsea lost. And they decided to throw in a complaint that Villa stewards were holding them up because they were eating ice cream. First of all, there's so many holes I want to pick into this story, right? The weather's not been good in Birmingham. Why are they eating ice cream, first of all? Second of all, I want to know if this was, you know, actual shithousery. Like, were they told? Were they told to hold up the Chelsea team? Probably not, but...
Maybe that is why Tuchel is so sour. He didn't get an ice cream sandwich.
What's an ice cream sandwich?
Are you serious?
What's an ice cream sandwich?
It's what, ice like, cream in a sandwich with like. It's
what
like,
type of bread? What type of
no,
bread?
No, it's
put
not
in?
Bread. It's like made with. Oh, okay. What's never mind. Go on with your point. Oh my god.
No. What type of bread do you put ice cream? Do you put an ice cream?
You don't put
sandwich
bread. It's just like a chocolate, like kind of like cookie thing. With ice cream in the middle.
Do you know, like, if you order a sandwich in the UK, you can usually, like, you have the option to have it between bread.
Or you have the ice cream to, like, and bread. What kind of sicko are you?
Or you have the option to put it in, like, a panini. Or, like, you also have the option to put it in a wrap. What I'm asking is, what kind of bread does the ice cream go in?
I said, what, like, a chocolate kind of, like, crumb kind of whatever. I don't even know. Kind of like, okay. Like a, you know how you put s'mores like with the I don't even know. I don't know. Whatever. I'll shut up. Go on.
All right. Tactically, you know, at the end of the day, the stewards might have been planning to hold off Chelsea in their own way. Our defense held them off in our own way. Ezri Konsa starting at right back. Courtney Hawes coming in, having another terrific game. And to be honest, for me, Villa just looking fairly comfortable, apart from about a 30-minute spell. And for me, Grealish coming back into the team, Bertrand Traore absolutely making them look silly. It lets us all kind of have a little bit of hope heading into next season that, hey, when our team is fully fit, we can do things. But it also raises that point. This whole victory, if we're going to summarize it, and I know we haven't even gotten into the goals yet, raises the point for us next season of how do we prevent, you know, a slip happening again when Jack Grealish perhaps gets another injury.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. And I know, Danny, we kind of talked about a few things when we did our little casual Twitter thing last night with a few just random people that joined in. We actually had a really good discussion. And the one thing that I can't remember if I brought up or someone else brought up was the contributions of Anwar El Ghazi and Bertrand Traore. That's 10 goals for El Ghazi and 7 for Traore. And you know what, I'll kind of raise my hand up too, saying at certain points of season, they're not good enough or giving them criticism. And you know what, on a game by game basis, that can be true sometimes, but it's a hell of a contribution for both of them. And for one, more than anything, Anwar El Ghazi, no one expected him to probably even get up half those goals, in my opinion. So I know you're a fan of him, Danny, because he just shoots. And I think that is something that's, I can't remember the guy's name that we were having the discussion with, and he kind of raised some good points about it too, but we just need more shooters in this team. It's nice to be cute and to make great plays, but if you're not having someone bold enough to take shots, either when, you know what, maybe the angle's not there, I'm going to create my own angle, or you know what, I just have to take this on myself. We need more of that. So whether it's getting to the next level of player and getting a true finisher in that way or whatever, it's a great input, and I think it puts him firmly in that kind of wing position to be his, to maybe lose unless we go and spend 30 odd million on a winger, which I don't know, seems like Dean Smith kind of comes out one day saying it's an exciting summer and the next, oh, you know what, we're not making massive signings. So I'm sure it's just kind of a bit of hokery pokery on his part, if that kind of makes sense.
Pardon? Was that said?
Yeah, today.
Oh, okay. That's a shame.
Yeah.
But also, you know, probably isn't a shame. It's probably a case of, listen, lads, your player's not worth 30 million. It's worth 20 million. That's what we're willing to pay. You've got to remember to take all of these things from managers with a pinch of salt. But Carl, I mean, you talk about Alghazi, and I'll pass the baton, so to speak, to Seb. But for me, that was Bertrand Traore's game, wasn't it? Traore ran that. He ran that from the missed opportunity after he like tapped the ball over a couple of defenders, to the goal, to just forcing Chelsea to foul him until he wins a penalty. I don't know what you thought, Seb, especially of that first goal.
Yeah, he caused them many problems, didn't he? And I think Bertrand Traore as a whole has really surprised this season. I mean, when we bought him in the summer, many fans were talking to French fans online, and they were saying that, you know, we won't enjoy him and he won't be a successful signing. But he's come back and proved everyone wrong. He's dominated in games. He's ran some games. You know, when Grealish was out, he's probably the closest thing we had to a Jack Grealish in terms of the players would end up looking towards him to create something and make something happen. And I mean, just for the Man City game alone, where he took that touch at the Etihad and could have finished it off in style, you know, what a goal that would have been. It's been a really good season for him, and one that he can cement now and then use to push on next season. I think we will spend money on attacking options. However, the fact that Anwar and Traore have both made themselves look comfortable in recent weeks, it's probably gone from being a two-winger summer to being probably a one-winger summer with Jack Grealish, Traore and Alghazi. I think touching on Alghazi for a second, Alghazi reminds me of Aston Villa as a club in general. When we signed Alghazi, you know, he was good, but you could see that there were strengths that he could go to. And I think every season he's improved consistently, which is exactly the same as Villa as a club. I mean, last season, Villa, when we were struggling, we were getting too many draws. I remember being sat here going, you know, if we turn these draws into wins, we'd be fine. Well, this season, we've turned last season's losses into this season's draws and last season's draws into this season's wins. If that makes it, I mean, I hope that makes sense. And similar to Alghazi, I mean, he's gone from strength to strength. He stepped up. He probably should have been player of the month in December. And, you know, he's formed a very formidable partnership on that wing.
Yeah, massively. And I think another player we can touch on now is that man, Marvis Nakamba. Good old Marv, showing up when needed. Wasn't really a poll, just kind of a tweet out earlier on the 7500 to hold account asking everyone's man of the match. And 95% of them were Marvis Nakamba. And you know what? You can't really say anything against that. Maybe the odd few will go with a few others. But Danny, he just didn't really put a foot wrong yesterday.
I thought he was a little bit dodgy yesterday.
You think? I thought he was excellent.
Yeah.
No.
Listen. I'm Marvis Nakamba's biggest fan. I thought he was great against Spurs. I did think
big
that,
up Nakamba.
So you know that first sort of 30 minutes or so where we were kind of on the back foot? He was losing the ball quite a bit. But I've said this before and I'll say it again. It's a myth, you know, when people say that Nakamba can't pass. He's a very good passer of the ball. And I think he works really well on that team. It gives McGinn more freedom. It gives Grealish more freedom as well. You know, he's more assured, I think, as a defender than Dougie Louise. And to be fair to Marvelous, every time he's come in ahead of Douglas Luiz, he's come in and, you know, basically shown that we're not missing him. Which that's not a criticism of Douglas Luiz, by the way. I think what we've got to do is, like, you know, we've got to realize that if we're praising Douglas Luiz as a Brazil under 23 captain, we've got to look at Marvelous Nakamba as one of the seriously up and coming African players. Like, he is a very good player. I could imagine him playing in a Champions League team. I'm not talking about Chelsea, Man United, whatever.
He played in a Championship team for time, didn't he? Was it with
Champions League team? Yeah, in Belgium,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, so.
But I mean, you know,
if he play at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I mean. Like, if he was in that, like, say for example, the Lille title winning team. Yeah, if he was in that team, I wouldn't bat an eyelid. He is that kind of player. I just think that we're probably underrating him a little bit as Villa fans, purely because he's been kind of that unknown quantity for so long. I don't think he's an unknown quantity anymore. We know what he can do.
The problem is, though, right, with bit part players is you never truly see what they can do on a consistent basis. I mean, the reason he's underappreciated probably is the fact that he normally gets 90 minutes every once a month, maybe. And you can't really truly decipher if that's enough to be a good player, if you know what I mean. Like, I love Nakamba, like you said, but would he work week in, week out? I think he played against Sheffield United. He had a good game prior to Sheffield United away, and Smith stuck him in again. And that was the game where we lacked forward creativity. Our final ball wasn't there. And I mean, in the end, we didn't end up scoring, much to our frustration. So I think certain games suit him probably better. Whereas if we put Douglas Luiz in for maybe Sheffield United, you know, he's better with his longer range passing than Nakamba. Nakamba's very calm and collected on the ball. So maybe if that gives us that fluidity and just another option, I think having two different types of midfielders almost is not a problem at all.
Yeah, massively. And you know what? Even if we move on to the goals now, I mean, there's another positive too, and a blessing. I don't remember the last time this actually happened. Villa scored from a corner. Of course, it wasn't headed into the box or anything. It was actually a kind of a set piece, kind of trick play, whatever you want to call it. And it actually came off for once. Maybe it's end of the season, just kind of being end of the season kind of things. But I'm still shocked that happens. And if either of you guys know the last time we scored from a corner, I would honestly love to hear it, because I genuinely can't remember. It's been that long. And of course, that man, Bertie Traore, also gets the penalty as well. So him being fully busy in that regard as well, I guess you can give him the goal and the assist kind of in that category. And a lot of praise has to go to Matty Target as well for pointing that out for the opening goal, albeit scuffed. But Danny, I'll come back to you. I mean, maybe I didn't describe these two goals in the best way possible, but what were your thoughts on them? I mean, Bruno Traore, once again, he's just getting in there when you need him the most.
Yeah, I think as well, just, you know, Bertrand Traore is brilliant. He was brilliant in that game. I think he was causing so much trouble for Chelsea. There was times when they switched El Ghazi and Traore left to right. And I think he almost scored early on. Sometimes his finishing kind of lacks, and we need to sort of sort that out. But yeah, I'm sure he'll get there. Reminds me a lot of sort of like early days of Jack Grealish, when he would get into the box and then not kind of bang one in. I think the goal was brilliant. Obviously, Matty Target, well-worked corner. They've obviously practiced that in training. The Chelsea defending there was woeful for a side that's been so good. You know, Edward Mendy are actually keeping more clean sheets than Emi Martinez so far this season. So, you know, they are a good defensive side, Chelsea. Then with the, you know, it's a great finish, by the way, from Bertrand Traore. It's just not going to be saved. But when it comes to the penalty, that was coming. That was coming, because Chelsea decided at some point after Villa scored that goal that their style of defending would be to just chop Villa players down. You know, stop the attack. Oh, Villa are going to go on a counter. Right, we're going to chop him down. Traore would get the ball, chop down. And, you know, I don't know if it was just late challenges, or I don't know if it was a strategy, but it came back to bite them, because Traore was making them look silly. They weren't getting the ball off him in legal means. And, you know, eventually Villa get the penalty. And listen, there's not a better penalty taker at Villa Park than Anwar El Ghazi. And I think really his penalty record probably rivals Bruno Fernandes.
Weren't they trying to make him retake it at one point because he slipped a bit or something?
Yeah, but it was still one shot.
There's no way you can touch the ball twice and hit it that cleanly still while slipping, but maybe that's just Prince Anwar El Ghazi at his finest more than anything.
You're going to complain. This was a big game for Chelsea. This is a huge game for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Obviously, they made it through in the end, but you know it wasn't in their hands that they would get into the Champions League.
Do we think that's a bit of a shame, though? Like, some part of me just wanted to beat them, so they missed out. And they were kind of crap, and they still got through it just because Leicester kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Blame Leicester, though, right? Like, blame Leicester. They got Spurs against Spurs. Less. So
I couldn't care less. Villa aren't involved. Whoever wants it can have it. I could not care less.
Yeah, fair play, Seb.
Fair enough.
But, touching on our set pieces just very quickly.
Yep.
I think I said it when I covered the game for the Twitter account a while ago, that I've seen circles with better corners than Aston Villa. Our set pieces in general just don't work with Villa. And it's really confusing because the amount of aerial presence we are able to have on the pitch is baffling, that we normally can't seem to work it towards anything. It normally leads to a free header, which we miss, or it probably doesn't beat the first man if you're talking about Ross Barkley's set pieces. I know he's not our problem anymore, so I won't get onto him. But yesterday, I think it shows that when the pressure's off, it allows the manager and the coaching staff to maybe have a bit more freedom on the training pitch. They were going into the game knowing that no matter what they got, they were finishing 11th. So maybe it was something that they thought, yeah, why not try it? Let's catch them out at the back post. I mean, I'm sure they've watched hours of Chelsea defending set pieces from this season because, you know, that's what they're paid to do ultimately. But the fact it worked a treat is so nice to see after such a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, let's get over to the three word reviews. Of course, you can go over to the 7500 Holt Twitter account, of course, at 7500 Holt. After every match, I kind of go on there and just ask you for your three word summaries, as simple as that. And of course, always thank you very much for the input. It's always appreciated. And you know what, for being the last game, there were some quite funny ones too, if I can actually find them in time, because I don't know why I decided to retweet so many things and push that thread further down, but always to be me. But anyways, let's get into them. Les Whirl says brown stain pants. Les, I hope that's because of the game, but anyways. Ernie Barnhurst says, great efforts, lads. Macavilla, fabulous.
Sorry. No, it's a good job Daniel's on mute because he's just spat out any remaining bits of drink that he had just taken. I couldn't let that slide. I'm sorry.
That's it. It's all good.
Cole's brilliant. Cole's brilliant for like reading stuff out before reading it. It's so funny.
Hey, it's still somewhat appropriate, so I'll review it an extra time when I'm actually reviewing this. But Tony Whiting saying, super marvelous Nakamba. Simon H, marvelous, marvelous Nakamba. We'll do two more. Phil V, gutsy, brilliant. My team, he kind of hyphenated it, so I'll give him that one. It's the end of the season, of course, and it's a big win. And we'll end it off with Jake McIntyre, next year Europe, and I think that's probably the best way to end this. So thank you everyone for your contributions this year, for getting involved. Of course, we'll bring this back next season. It seemed to honestly really kind of kick off and gain everyone's interest, really. So this will be something we will of course continue to do. But anyways, Danny, I'll move it over to you. I'll put you right on the spot after accidentally spitting your water out or whatever it was. I didn't see it because I wasn't looking at it, but who was your man of the match?
Bertrand Traore, every day of the week. He ran the game. We played through him. Jack Grealish was good for sure, but man, it's like Bertrand Traore had something, you know, lit up behind him, because I think it just came up against a former team and decided that he was going to be, you know, decided that he was going to be on another level. So fair play to him. Chelsea couldn't get anywhere near him. Drew fouls like Jack Grealish himself. And yeah, just sublime to watch, as he is sometimes. Very, very silky player.
Fair play. Seb, how about you?
I think I wrote in my player ratings that Nakamba was my man of the match, so I've probably got to stick with that. I mean, I did think he was very good and kept a quick, pacey, dangerous Chelsea attack at bay, really.
That's fair. That's fair. You know what? The thing that really kind of, one thing that annoyed me about yesterday was that one goal that what crept in that I thought Emi Martinez got to it somehow with some unworldly power. And I would have easily given a man of the match just for keeping that clean sheet to break that record. Of course, that's been withstood for several years now from Brad Friedel, but I have to go with Marv as well. I mean, in my opinion, he didn't put a foot wrong. He got rid of the ball when needed. And I think that's been one of the main kind of criticisms I've gained this team at times, especially over the last two seasons, is holding on to the ball for too long when he really shouldn't be. And maybe part of that's panic on his part, but I do just love a kind of a sweeper up there that can get rid of it and just kind of make things a little bit more simple. Simple is always good for me, so I'll keep it that way, of course. But anyways, guys, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with the rest of the podcast. And welcome back to the second half of this edition of the Holtcast. Of course, we're going to switch focuses from the first team onto the youth setup, of course, because it was the FA Youth Cup final this evening. Of course, you're hearing this on a Tuesday. It was last night. I hope that all makes sense. But anyways, Villa ran out 2-1 winners, of course. I mean, Danny, I'll come to you first. It's just, I don't know what Seb's laughing at, and I don't know what this podcast is, but anyways.
It's because I'm yawning. It's because I'm tired as heck.
I appreciate your excitement for what I'm going to ask you now, but it's just a brilliant moment for the club, isn't it? I mean, I think I saw that the coaching staff mentioned afterwards to the Birmingham Mail in particular that I think Christian Purslow was there, and they kind of just mentioned and briefly touched on the fact that having him, like someone like him, involved the club there, kind of what it means to the stature of it and the importance of it, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's good to see that they were there, not just kind of like sitting at home watching it on the TV screens. You know, even to see like Dean Smith kind of like sit there in the stands like a proud dad at a year five assembly. You know, it was good to see. It was good to see. And you know what? What was even better, I think, more than anything, like you say what you like about Purslow being there or whatever, the fact that we had thousands of fans in the stadium cheering the lads on was brilliant. And cheering the lads out at full pelt as well. It's home advantage. Serious home advantage. And it was, you know, it was obvious. You could see that. And I think that Liverpool were probably a little bit flustered by it. But wow, I have to say, what a performance and what an advert for Villa's future. Every single one of those boys put in a shift today. I'll tell you that right now before even getting into the game.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where you look at it too, and you mentioned it there, Danny, with fans. Realistically, when's ever the time that they usually get that many fans as it is, even in a quarter filled Villa Park? It's a great experience, albeit it's not the full experience, but just getting in front of a large group of fans is, in my opinion, just another step on getting them to the next level, whether it be with Villa, with whoever. And I think the best thing with that is just it gets them in the mentality of where can I go from here is, say, 500 people being frustrated because I missed the goal, or cheering me on 3,000 odd because I just scored an absolute worldie. It's just good to get them in the mentality that, you know what, there's outside pressure. And when you're in a youth setup bubble, you don't always kind of face that. So once again, of course, they proved in the actual FA Cup against Liverpool, they handled themselves very well in difficult circumstances. And then just doing the club proud again today has just been wonderful. And Seb, I'll come to you. Obviously, we're not going to lie on this podcast. Of course, you were working. You were making the dollar bills, of course. You have to support yourself. I understand that. You got to do all that kind of stuff. And you missed this game. But what are your thoughts on the youth setup as a whole, where it's kind of come from and where it is now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you made some good points. I was gutted not to watch it. I'll always, you know, support whichever Villa team's playing, whether that be the youth setup, whether that be the men's or women's team. You know, if they're Aston Villa, then I'm interested. I think it probably whets the appetite for the players, having the fans there, knowing that the potential is there for them to go and grasp that opportunity now to do that every week, do that in front of, you know, 40,000 instead of 10,000. It was nice for the people that were back there. I mean, I experienced it on Sunday with Chelsea, but it would have been nice for the people to be back inside Villa Park watching whatever game possible. And I think full credit has to go to Christian Perslow, NSWE, Dean Smith and all involved for not neglecting the youth academy like it has been in recent years down at Villa Park and showing some real faith in them and even bedding in one or two or three with Ramsey, Chukwuemeka and Philogene Bidas within the first team this year. You know, I think the trust that he has in them will shine through that training room and you know, when they're talking about it in the dressing rooms after, you know, they'll be going, oh, yeah, I was on the bench. I made my first team appearance this week. The other players will go, oh, I want to do that. I've got to work as hard as them. And it creates almost a professional atmosphere where everyone's trying to better everyone to make them all better.
Yeah, massively. And I think it kind of, not even just that, but even on the business kind of standpoint of things, it's all about sustainability. Finally, this football club is in the latest century in terms of you need a good youth set up to, you know what, even if they're not going to make your first team, they can make someone else's. There's profit to be had there. And it's just kind of that whole mentality of having kind of professionalism from the very earliest of age groups all the way to the top and kind of using it as a perfectly kind of sounding engine. All the cogs are going perfectly. And I feel like that's what we're finally getting. Of course, you know what? We're still maybe behind in some instances to you look at your cities and of course other teams that can throw way more than anyone else, but that's to be expected, of course, with the financial backing that they have. But it's just so exciting to see how far not just this team, but the whole youth setup as a whole has come since 2 years ago. It's astounding, isn't it, Danny?
Yeah, 100%. I think this is probably the best group of youngsters that we've had for like a very long time. I think it was 2002 was the last time we won that FA Youth Cup. Wait, did you say controversial?
No, I said 100%.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, 100%, man. Like, I think I looked at those players and I just think to myself, every single one of those guys has potential. Now, obviously, not all of them are going to make it, but I think the point of a youth academy is that if three or four of them do make it, then you're really sort of rolling in it. And yeah, as you say, you want them to go on and be successful footballers wherever they go to. You know, it depends how you measure success. If most of those lads go out and play League One, League Two, Championship football, fantastic. You know, and I think that's the thing. I think Villa are making themselves a team where young players will want to come to. You know, they'll look at that youth setup and think, you know, even with that FA Youth Cup final now under our belt, young players are going to look at that and go, right, this is the place I want to be. This is the place for my development. I don't want to go to Manchester United. I don't want to go to Liverpool. I don't want to go to Manchester City where it's, you know, completely sort of where it's way more difficult to get into the team. I want to come to Villa. They've got to like build themselves as sort of like the land of opportunity, which is why sort of like next season, we're going to need to see the Chukwuemekas come through. And for what it's worth, right, Chukwuemeka wasn't even the best player on the pitch today. Like Arjun Reike was brilliant. You know, there was a lot of decent performances out there, and it's not necessarily the ones that we've been talking about. So fair play. I think the first goal was scored by Ben Crisine,
mm-hmm.
who obviously we signed from the lower leagues.
Exeter.
Yeah, Exeter City, that's right. But he hasn't had first team football with us. That's fine because we're trying to take again that youth team up to a certain level. It almost works like the England under 21 setup, doesn't it? It almost works like that in the sense that you want these players to maybe kind of work together so that when they get into the first team, they've already got that chemistry, they've already got that Villa sort of mentality in them. And we saw that. So Ben Crisine scored that first goal, but obviously it came from a brilliant Villa move. The way that the Villa play it out the back, the way that the only time we concede is when we make our own mistakes. Like it's just forward thinking football. And I think even with the penalty today as well, you know, Villa deserved it. It was well put away, and just constantly creating chances, just all over them. And as I say, outplayed them, just outplayed Liverpool. Now it's just not something you expect to see.
Yeah, and the one player I will probably speak highest about today is Kane Kessler. He is your go-to wing back. The man was playing everywhere. He has an absolute engine on him. The fact that I would see him 1 second just breaking up play at the back, 2 seconds later, he's on a break up the right-hand wing above everyone else. He just has the legs to him. And you can see that there's parts of his game where he's not afraid to take on an opportunity. He's also not afraid to kind of sacrifice an opportunity as well. You know what? Maybe there's a smarter play as well. So that's great to see. I can't remember the other one. Brad Young as well. I mean, there's just so many. You can go on and on about probably each individual player in particular. But I think the other thing too, Danny, that maybe we haven't mentioned is, I guess you kind of did there. You touched on with the style of play. The style of play is mirroring the first team. And that's the most important thing. Probably 5 years ago, you could probably argue that in some setups, you would have a first team playing, say, attacking football, kind of running gun stuff. The younger setups may not even play that way. It may be a particularly different brand of football all in all. And it's great to see that it's just going from the top to the bottom in terms of play style, mentality, and all that kind of stuff as well.
So like, I don't know how much Dean Smith is kind of behind that.
Yeah.
But Brentford, like the reason why they were able to bring in good young players and the reason why Brentford have been successful like past Dean Smith is because, you know, down their academy, down their sort of like reserves and everything, they play the same style of football. The coaches play the same style of football. And it seems like at Villa, we're trying to do a similar thing here. I'm not saying that Brentford are the model, but really it's Barcelona that's the model. Barcelona's the model. Brentford copied that. Barcelona and Ajax is the model. Brentford copied that. And we're kind of trying to follow that. Now, in 2021, does that still work? I don't know. It's not that we're trying to play tiki-taka, but the idea is that there's a brand and there's an identity. How long have we been waiting for an identity of football? So many clubs throw away that abstract idea of one, that abstract notion of one. We're not the only team who talk about it. You know, Manchester United talk about it. They try to find their identity. Arsenal, they're trying to find their identity. They don't know what their identity is. Liverpool, okay, they might have it under Klopp, you know, the gegenpressing thing. But for us, it's the fact that we're seeing that now. It's really, really quite promising.
Yeah, it goes beyond Dean Smith too. I mean, there's always a shelf life, I should say, on every manager, of course. And even if he's gone in, say, 2 years, whatever it is, I think we're going to stick to this. You're going to find another manager who can come in and try to play that brand that suits the club. When can you ever have said that in the past? You had Paul Lambert come in, who I don't even want to go on about. You have Steve Bruce come in. I mean, maybe there's just a theme of boring kind of setting plays and managers there, I guess. Maybe that's not the best example. But it's just been far too long where it's been, okay, someone else comes in, things need to change. Okay, it doesn't go well. Next person, can they make it kind of fix? And it's not even just the manager. It's the whole club needs to be going in one motion, one direction together. First time of me being a Villa fan seeing this. And I mean, it's just brilliant to see. But Seb, do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think Daniel summed it up perfectly, to be honest. I think probably the last manager we had that didn't neglect the youth squad is probably Tim Sherwood. Obviously, he brought through the one and only Jack Grealish. I think I remember rightly that he brought through Kane at Spurs as well, so he hasn't got a bad record at all. But yeah, like I said, massive praise has to go to Christian Perslow, because I remember one of the first things that he wanted to integrate when he was first appointed is the setup that in your youth squad, say you have an under 19 squad, you should have 16, 17, 18 year olds playing, the best in the world. You shouldn't have 19, 20 year olds playing that are still ready to make that push forward. And he said something like, if you're not in the first team by 21 and 22, you're probably not going to make it at all, which is why we decided to let Callum O'Hare go, which at the time seemed a really controversial decision, but now it looks like it's probably for the best. I mean, I'd say Chuck Wamaker's probably on his level already, if not progressing further and quicker with the squad that he's at. The interesting comparison to Brentford is the fact that a few years ago, I don't know whether it was under Smith or not, one of you will have to correct me on this, but they actually got rid of their youth squad, and they have a Brentford team and a Brentford B team. So it can be any age group, and it will just be that B team that represent any ages. So whether Villa decide to move to that in the future, because obviously it's working well at the moment, but say in 2, 3, 4 years' time, if these players haven't progressed as we'd probably expected them to, maybe we could see a big reshuffle and go to the same sort of philosophy.
I think, I'm not sure if it's the same thing. I'm not sure it's something that Villa would necessarily do, because I think sometimes teams try to adopt that model and they get rid of their academy, which obviously...
Like Birmingham City have done.
Like Birmingham City did, yeah. And that did not go down. Did not go down well. I'm not sure exactly what Brentford's setup is, but I can't see us moving in that direction, so to speak. That's quite an interesting model, the B team model.
The only reason I know about it is because ex-Villa player Aaron Presley's heavily involved with their B team. I think he joined them at the time where they still had their youth squads, and then I think a few weeks later it all changed. So it would be interesting to hear what he thought on it.
Fair play. Yeah, I've got to look into that Brentford B team model a little bit more. I'm not sure. Do they have an academy?
I don't think they do. I think it's just the B team, and they'll look for the best 19, 18, 17 year olds and stick them in the B team. I think. I mean, I could be talking out my ass here, but
I'm sure.
Will correct me.
Yeah, I'm sure Cole can edit it once he double checks this.
Great. More work to do. Thank you guys very much. But I guess maybe one way to kind of end this part of the podcast and almost kind of end it as a whole, we'll kind of do a little bit of a kind of triangular table, if I can get that out of my mouth properly, in terms of who we're most looking forward to coming through the ranks at Villa right now. So, Danny, I'll start with you.
I'm going to big up my boy Arjun Rijki, just because I know that, you know, he's not talked about enough, but the level of passing that this guy has is brilliant. You know, you talk about sort of Ross Barkley and the way that you expect him to play at number 10 and then kind of drop back and all that kind of thing. Arjun Rijki does that really well. You know, you see him kind of push up in a more functional way, by the way, I should just say, you see him push up the pitch and kind of get involved in the attacks, but at the same time, you see him drop deep and spray passes about. Punjabi Pirlo is what I like to call him. We'll see if that one sticks. But I know that he's got a lot of support from the Asian community in Birmingham. And I think I'd love to see another South Asian player come through at Villa. I know Issa Suleiman kind of, you know, it never really happened for him in the Villa first team, but I'd love to see, you know, Rijki follow in like Neil Taylor's footsteps and make us all proud.
Absolutely. Seb, how about you?
I think I could probably list any single one of those players that played tonight and you wouldn't be able to disagree. But for me, I think you touched on him. Perfect captain material. I mean, he's a typical Dean Smith fullback, if you like, but Kane Kessler-Hayden, he screams what we've been missing out for in recent years.
Yeah, massively. You took mine, so I was going to go with Kane Kessler as well. I mean, he just, I don't know if it's hard to get excited about a fullback or not, but it's just the way he plays, the engine. I'm just excited to see what else he can add to his game. He's just so young. And you kind of think, you know what, you add a few more different kind of skills to that already impressive skill set, and he could be a dangerous player. And you know what, Matty Cash could be looking kind of behind him with a little bit of fear and kind of the sense of, you know what, if I don't put in the shift continually, this young guy is on my back. So that's more than good to see. But anyways, guys, before we wrap it up, per se, these guys know what I'm talking about. But anyways, is there anything else we should bring up before we finish things off?
No, I think we're all good, man. I think it's been
I don't think we are. Yeah. And I'm going to rat him out here. I think the viewers will love me for it. But off air, Cole was saying that he's recently wrote, that's really bad of me.
He means in like the last 20 minutes.
he's pieced together a little rap about one of our players. I mean, I'm not going to big him up too much because I don't want to put the pressure on his shoulders for it to all flop and him look an embarrassment. However, I am just going to link it in. Cole, take it away.
Okay, so the whole backstory of this is we were talking about Drake and rapping and stuff, and when Seb was talking, of course, I was still listening, so I'm still being a good host. But I thought, you know what, it's the last podcast of the season, of course, it's done now. Let's end it off with some positivity and embarrass myself before we bring out our kind of season in review pod. Of course, it's only about 6 lines long. It's very short. I'll turn my hat backwards.
I just want to point out, me and Daniel haven't heard this, so this will be our live reaction to it.
And of course, it's about Courtney Hawes because he has a single out there.
Paul's just put his cap on backwards.
I have to get
turned
into it.
Around on his head.
Paneling is in a Justin Bieber.
See Swizzy's out now, so
oh my god,
let's get this out. There won't be any beat, so this might be really tone deaf and whatever. This is gonna be terrible.
It's spoken word.
What kind of beat should I go with? Like
Daniel, it's fine. You know, it's fine. It's spoken word poetry. Come on, let's go.
Okay, so anyways, Hoss, he's boss. He's got to make a beat with Rick Ross. His passing is good. His heading is tight. Up the villa, and you know what? Good night. I you know what, for coming up with that in 20 seconds, I think that's pretty good.
You know what, I'm gonna take over Cole's duty. Thank you all for listening so much. You probably won't see him make another appearance on the podcast anytime soon. Daniel's got his head in his hands. He's ashamed. He wants to go to bed. So do I. That hurt my ears and it probably hurt yours too. Make sure to check us out on all social media accounts. Cole, you're an embarrassment to us all.
I appreciate it. Of course.
No. Wait. Can I just say something?
Yeah.
No, I just want to say, just so I can rescue Cole from this embarrassment.
That Danny Razzle is not associated with this podcast anymore.
I just wanted to say what a terrific job that Cole's done all season. He's been encouraging us all to kind of like, he's been here basically week in, week out, getting out, you know, previews and reviews of all the Villa matches all season. And it's worth saying that Cole does this for free pretty much. So
I'd like to echo that. Yeah.
I won't say for free. You know, this. You know, there might be a little. You know, there might be a couple of like, you know, backdoor deals going on. But
yeah,
not a record deal anytime soon, though.
No, not a record deal. But no, Cole spends a lot of his time editing the podcast, encouraging us to get on the podcast, and yeah, it's been a terrific season for Cole and the Hulkcast. So yeah, just wanted to say well done to him.
Well, I appreciate it, Danny. I was going to give your thank yous till the season review so I can thank Simon as well and everybody. So I'll hold that till then. I'll take all the glory because of my rap. Drizzy Drake, hit me up. I'll take anything right now. I still have school debts to pay off. So hit me up. I'm always here for a good sick beat. But anyways, well, we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much, guys, for joining me. Of course, you can find Danny on Twitter at Razzajourno. You can find, I almost said Simon, Sev on Twitter at SebastianBacon8. I'm just so used to Simon being here. It's in my mind now with that outro. But anyways, of course, you can find me on Twitter at TalkAstonVilla as well. Tweet the team at 7500 to Holt. Email the podcast, HoltCast@gmail.com. That's it, guys. The season's over. Thank you very much for joining us. It's I just love doing these. It's always fun to chat with friends that I consider friends now, I should really say. I don't know if this makes sense. I'm still kind of fuming over my beat not going well in the minds of these two fellows. But anyways, we'll leave it there. We'll be back with a season review very shortly. And don't forget, up the Villa.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.